Welcome to another episode of How to Exit. My name is Dennis Mizrisky, and I'm an M&A advisor, help clients buy, sell, and value businesses. Today, our guest is Dr. Orato, a former owner of Orato Dermatology. Dr. Orato, thank you so much for being here.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Last year, we helped Dr. Orato sell her practice, and today, we're going to talk about the process. We're going to be talking about the process of selling a medical practice, and we're going to be talking about your process of from the seller standpoint of how do we go through the sale acquisition. With that said, maybe start off just by introduce yourself, talk about yourself, your business, how did you get started, and so forth.
Sure. My name is Nadia Urado, and I am a dermatologist. I've been in private practice now for what feels like over two decades, I believe. And I have enjoyed my practice of dermatology. I got to a junction last year where I was ready to sell my second practice in Massachusetts. It had been a good experience for me, and I enjoyed my practice. It was a successful practice, but had gotten to a point in my career where I was ready to move on to another chapter. And at that point, I was left with the question of, well, how do I transition into something else? And this was rather daunting, sort of a realization. Looking out there, I didn't really have a lot of resources or connections out there to be able to sort of figure out who was looking to buy a practice and what the value of my practice would be, and how to even begin the process. So actually, my accountant actually was familiar with Dennis's group, and strongly recommended them because he had had some positive experiences from some of his clients with their group. So I met with Dennis and his partner, and we sort of talked a little bit about what my goals were. Yep. And what my practice was like and what I hoped to achieve, and financially what my expectations were in terms of the sale. And so we spent a great deal of time in depth them getting to know me and essentially figuring out what kind of transition I had hoped to make. Because at 47, I was 47 at that time, I was still wanting to practice my trade, and I was still planning to stay in the same location. So I wanted to transition to another group to alleviate some of the administrative hassles and pressures of owning my own business, as I wanted to embark on some other adventures in my life. But I still wanted to be a practicing dermatologist. So I was interested in a transition in which I could continue to stay on and be a dermatologist and do what I love to do. And so I was explained this to Gary and Dennis, who were very interested in finding out, again, you know, personalizing the experience for me so that they would be able to better solicit clients and prospective buyers that might be a good match for me. And that was one thing I was struck by for Dennis and Gary, is that they were interested in making a good match, not just a sale, but a match, and finding out the essential parts to me that were a priority in my practice, in my business, and moving forward. Things like what kind of, you know, practice could you see yourself joining? Would you like to stay on full time? Would you like to stay on part time? What kind of salary expectations would you like to have given those aspects? What kinds of aspects of your practice do you enjoy? Would you like to stay the same? What would you will be okay with changes and differences? Where would you like to practice? We had three offices. And so questions like this, very practical matters of how would this transition take place? And so we had this initial meeting. They then they had we had other meetings where Dennis and Gary would took in all of the sort of hard facts about our practice, our financial data, our tax records, yeah. our understanding how our offices worked. They visited our offices. And so this was important too, I think, in understanding sort of what the practice was about. So they knew how to market it and who might be interested in reaching out yeah. And joining.
As I remember, you had two different companies that approached you before right. you decided to look for an M&A advisor. Yes. Why did you decide to actually hire an M&A advisor versus you already pretty much had the buyers, although we didn't end up selling to those buyers.
Right.
Why did you decide to actually go with an M&A advisor?
Yes, I think that once, even when you have a prospective buyer, this is a very large transaction to make. The process of actually selling a business, and we had been in business for 6 years, 6-7 years, something like that. So it was a very established business, and so there was a lot involved with it. And frankly, it was just intimidating to know how to approach these buyers, how to present the practice, how to lay out our portfolio. There are many, many steps in the negotiation process, and I realized that this was a little out of my league in presenting this, and I wanted to get the best value for my business that I had put a lot of energy, time, effort, blood, sweat, and tears, as you might say. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to make sure that I was also getting the best value for my practice. Yep. And I did want to see if this was one prospective buyer. I was not at that time ready to sell to the first buyer, even if it wasn't a good buyer. So I wanted to see if there were other possibilities as well. So for those reasons.
Great. Well, thank you. What did you think made your business appealing to buyers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my practice was appealing to buyers because it was successful. So the numbers worked out. It was making a good profit. That I was also wanting and eager to stay on, and I was the practicing dermatologist yep. there. We had other providers too, but I was the main provider and the only doctor in the group. And I think that also was a positive, was that I was desiring to stay on. And
do you think it's possible to sell a practice for a doctor, for any medical practitioner, without actually staying on?
I think that one could, but I think it is challenging. I think it's more of a risk to the prospective buyer. If they have people lined up, then I guess it may be less of a risk, but the value of the practice, the patients who are attached to me as the physician, who identified me as their doctor, certainly would prefer if they knew that the new people, the new administration that was being on hold would be.
We find that in medical businesses, having a provider stay on for at least 12 months is crucial.
Yeah.
It's crucial to any business transaction in the medical industry for sure.
Regarding
medical businesses, do you think now it's more than ever to diversify the stream of income versus health insurance reimbursement versus cash reimbursement? How do you think buyers look at the framework of revenue?
Yes, I think that health insurances and the task of getting reimbursements is increasingly challenging. So the buyers of a dermatology practice certainly would be interested if there was a large cash cash revenue as well.
That helps out with receivables.
Yes, which helps out with receivables. Yep. And our practice did have that. It wasn't the majority of our practice, but it was a sizable part of our practice. And it also made our dermatology practice more comprehensive as well, being both a surgical, a medical, and a cosmetic practice. Also allowed for, you know, some diversity that I think also was appealing.
Yeah, I look back at some of my notes, and it took us 6 months to actually full transition from the time we actually signed the listing agreement all the way down to the sale. It took us 6 months. So usually when we met first time, we gave you 8, 9, 12 months time frame. It actually went much quicker than that. My question to you is, what are the major issues in due diligence you face, or were there any part of the whole process that stood out for you the most that you couldn't handle, or the stress levels?
Well, the waiting process. Well, 6 months is certainly a very rapid time period in order for a sale to occur. The waiting process and the transition, waiting for the buyers to move along and be satisfied with the data we were presenting, et cetera, was always challenging too. I felt like my practice was put a little bit on hold during the periods where we were going to be anticipating the sale, because I wasn't wanting to make any drastic changes or keep anything, or to make sort of any decisions that would, impede what the new practice was going to be doing.
Yeah, I remember one of the issues that we had, and is the medical billing software. You guys, I remember, switched maybe 4, 5, 6 months prior to us going on the market.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about...
Yeah, so that was a little a bit of a pain in the neck, in the sense that we had one billing company for most of our practice existence here in Massachusetts, and about 4 months before we were going to sell, we actually changed over to in-house billing. And that was a complexity that introduced another level of analysis challenges for everyone involved. Yeah. But yeah, we did that. It was the practice manager that I had at that time was advocating for an in-house billing system. Yeah. And so at that time, we changed our EMR and we changed our into in-house billing.
So what would you recommend to somebody that's thinking about possibly selling in the next year?
Don't do that.
Don't do it. Just want to make sure we're clear.
Yes, right.
What about inventory? I remember inventory was also somewhat of a touchy subject. Buyers coming in, they might have different costs for inventory, might have different inventory products that they want to have in mind. What kind of issues do you have when we talk about inventory, and what type of inventory does a dermatology office actually have?
Yes. So we had a lot of inventory. We had a lot of medical supplies. Buying in bulk reduced our overhead costs. Yeah. So we had a lot of things like that, both in our cosmetics division as well as our medical and surgical division. And so we had a fair amount stocked up. I think if I could have, if I had some advice to give about that, I would say if you're anticipating selling, to try to use up your inventory and not let too much stock up there. It just adds another element of something to negotiate is, well, we have all of this inventory and what would be the value of that, et cetera. So trying to use that down is, I think, what I would recommend.
Yep, great. Thank you. One of the issues we ran into was the landlord of Framingham office.
Yes.
I remember this was really aggravating situation where you were on a month-to-month, they didn't want it to renew. Talk about the situation of landlords and what things should the seller be thinking about.
Yeah, having lease and then transitioning that over is something critical in a sale. And we had the challenge of our as Janice mentioned, we were on a month to month because the landlord was planning to do something else with our space. So unfortunately, during our sale process, we were looking for another space in the same town of one of our offices. And so in this transition, we were going to need to move to another office. And so if there's any way you can maintain a lease, a year-to-year lease, in the transition process, that is certainly ideal. If you own the space, even better, because one of our offices was in a medical condo that I did own, and so that was obviously a nice, simple transition to make for me to design a lease for the new buyers. But our old space, it was a challenge for the new buyers because they had to also be looking for a new place and work that out. It was an additional hassle.
Yeah. I think you never know what type of a office space a buyer is going to be looking for. There are possibilities where a buyer is going to want to consolidate it all into one office. There's other possibilities where there's just not enough space for the office. So I think it's crucial to understand where you stand with the landlord in any transition, because the landlord can kill the deal.
Absolutely.
Thankfully, not in this occasion.
Yes, but thankfully.
We came really close, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
As part of the sales agreement, we help negotiate the employment agreement for you, for sure. Do you have difficulties being an employee versus an owner? What's the life after?
Life afterwards, yeah. I have to say, for me, it has been a wonderful transition because I've been able to let go of a lot of the administrative hassles that were really aggravating for me, very stressful. And so for me, I have great appreciation for no longer needing to do that, but to actually just show up at work and be a doctor and treat my patients and not worry about the staff, not worry about filing the insurance. Write a good note and, you know, communicate well with the patients, make sure we have, you know, proper staff there. So there's stuff that I'm certainly involved with, but the major headaches of owning a business and being on 24/7 isn't there anymore, and that's made a palpable difference in my life. And being able to then move thought time and just time in general to other activities and other things, which has been good.
Yep. And I remember that was one of your requirements, and when we were looking for a buyer, we wanted to make sure a buyer satisfy the requirements of you personally.
Yes.
We knew that employment agreement is going to be crucial in any negotiation that we had. So I'm glad it's working out.
Yeah.
Which sounds to be
working very out much great. So. Yeah.
Gone through the whole process. We went through due diligence. We went through negotiation. Went through employment agreement negotiation. Knowing what you know now, what would you advise to somebody they're thinking about selling? Not maybe now, but maybe in 2 years or 3 years, starting to think about the exit plan strategy. What would you advise be now if you have time to plan the exit?
Yes, I think it is nice if you have the advantage of a couple of years where before you want to make that transition, because I think you can set up your practice appropriately. I think I would suggest, one, making sure your lease agreement is year to year and there isn't any sort of obstacle that you foresee might be there. Second is having stable staff as much as you can, because it would be very helpful to have the staff that you have be very comfortable and stable, so that when the transition is made, there's good security that the staff will also be willing and wanting to stay. That's very helpful in the transition. So I'd say the stability of your practice is probably the single most important thing. Not making too many changes, particularly as it gets close to the sale time. Not changes in staff, not changes in location, not major changes as in your practice styles, but stability. And I think that is a very, very helpful thing. I think it's in your best interest to sell your practice when you're when everything is going well, rather than if there's a downturn for some reason, if you cut out a provider, for example, or if you make a lot of big changes in what services you provide. I think that can kind of change, make it more a confounding factor, really. It would be a confounding factor for the valuation of your practice. So you want to be trying to sell it at a time where it's at a good peak. And I think that's helpful.
Great. Dr. Arda, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. Really love to connect again. It was very joyful working with you, and we wish you the best.
Thank you, Gary. Thank Dennis.
Thank you for listening to the first episode of How to Exit, a podcast dedicated to business exit strategy. If you like what you hear, hit subscribe button and share the podcast. Thanks for listening.